If you could redesign the human body, what would you do? On the Level Up Human podcast, we ask experts and our audience how they would change our species and let our comedian judges decide what upgrades to slot into our DNA. Our guests have included experts like Alice Roberts, Marcus de Sotoy, and Dean Burnett, and comedians Zoe Lyons, Hugh Dennis, and Paul Sinha. Evolve. Come on, somebody has to.
And welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. And this is a momentous recording. We are recording this on October the 11th, which is not only my dad's birthday. Happy birthday, Dad. I assume you're not listening, and that is definitely for the best. But it's also the date on which, in 1962, Pope John the 23rd convened the Second Vatican Council to reform the Catholic Church. And coincidentally, on October the 11th, 1975, the American comedy show Saturday Night Live first aired, hosted by George Carlin. One event saw a maverick performer presiding over a madcap show where people in silly costumes said outrageous things that made onlookers double over with laughter and led to suspicions that the cast must have been smoking something. And the other was Saturday Night Live. On today's episode of Worst Foot Forward, we honour both these events. I'll be doing my best to mention all seven of George Carlin's seven words you can't say on television, while my co-host has agreed that he will do the show facing the congregation and only partially in Latin. And here he is, the Agnes to my Dei, the PA to my Jesu, and the Holy to my shit, it's Ben Vanderveld.
Salve, salve.
Right.
Yeah, I was trying to think of all the Latin that I know, and all I had was Caecilius Est Pater, and that's it.
Are we going to go highbrow at the start of this?
No, because I'm out of Latin, mate.
See if that's all your Latin. Today also, Bobby Charlton's 80th birthday.
Oh.
Yeah, my dad shares his birthday with Bobby. Yes, our guest being a gooner is doing the wanker sign into the air. And Ronnie Rosenthal's birthday.
Oh, now we're talking, yeah.
Rodney Marsh, I think, as well. A few legendary footballers in there.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, no, this is not a podcast that celebrates Sir Bobby Charlton. He's far too much of a high achiever.
Yes. We need Suzanne Charlton.
Suzanne Charlton?
I think, is she his daughter? Was she like a newsreader or a weather girl or something?
Maybe. Is she also bald?
Presumably they all are.
That's the entire Charlton clan are.
Yeah.
We should introduce our guest. Our guest is yet another multi-talented individual. He is a stand-up comedian, an actor, and a playwright. I've known him quite a few years now. He has performed two excellent stand-up comedy shows at the Edinburgh Festival, tours all the way around the world performing, including to South Africa, where he regales crowds with stories of South African penguins shitting himself on an Aztec pyramid and his girlfriend's fairly poor deployment of the Umbongo theme tune. He is also an award-nominated and award-winning playwright.
Yeah, might be by the time this goes out.
By the time this goes out. Definitely award-nominated playwright whose plays have been put on at the Bush Theatre, the Lyric, the Orange Tree Theatre, the Royal Court, and in New York City as well. He is currently writing a play for Northern Stage and has also been nominated for the prestigious Alfred Fagan Award and another award that we are not allowed to tell you about. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Archie Maddox.
Hi.
Did you feel intimidated by your own CV there?
Yeah, I was listening to the guy. This all sounds fucking fake, right?
Yeah. You shit yourself on an Aztec pyramid.
Yeah.
That's why you're not allowed in the Crystal Maze, mate.
Mate, the amount of times I've shat myself as an adult is, I think, through the roof, really. I think you shouldn't be more than two times, and mine is way over two.
Well, and do you do it on global monuments?
I do it around different countries. Yeah. I shat myself in Egypt, I shat myself in Italy. I think that's
what the S in UNESCO stands for.
Maybe. I think it's my version of Brexit. I'm going around doing the English's way, going, yeah, fuck you. Have some of this shit.
I don't know, I think it's like, you know how in the 18th and 19th century you used to get the sons of British aristocracy would go around Europe on the Grand Tour. That's Archie's Grand Tour.
Yeah. I'm aiming to shit myself on every continent.
What, do you want to do seven continents in 7 days? Like, run
pretty
a line?
Much. I mean, yeah.
What a red nose day that's going to be.
An incredibly non-fibrous diet as well, to eat the aid of pooping.
The problem is, like, there is a fashion for lots of TV shows sending, like, pairs of comics round the world, yeah, having adventures outside of their comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can't do those programmes, because it'll just be...
My comfort zone is way further than a lot of people's comfort zone will...
It's not Channel 5 friendly.
No, I don't even think it would be Channel 5, 11:35 p.m. on a Friday night, box of tissues time.
Is that what Men in Motors is now?
I think so, yeah. Why did that guy miss that? That was the dumbest TV channel I've ever seen.
It was really near the top.
Yeah.
It's like, it was on page 2 or something. Yeah. What were you going to say then?
As an adult. You must have shot yourself as an adult.
I almost certainly have.
We've all at some point had a fart that followed through, surely. Even if it's not the full blown.
No, I'm talking full on. If there was a toilet here, it would be just coated.
That's why we're glad this is just an oral medium, this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, sadly, Archie has already marked his territory here, yeah, in Barry's flat.
I've gone lowbrow straight. You were talking Latin a second ago. Yeah.
I feel like we're meeting somewhere in the middle now.
I've got no Latin words, so I figure, you know what? What am I good at? Shitting myself in different countries. Let's go with that. That's my opening gambit.
Well, from the subject that we've done today, I looked at some bits and bobs of old Roman and Greek plays, and there's a lot of fecal humour in them, yeah, and a lot of crap in it as well.
Yeah.
So Archie, we always ask our guests what they are worst at in the world. We know what you're best at: shitting your pants in foreign countries. What are you worst at in the world?
I think worst at is sensing the tone and staying appropriate at all the times. So
do tell.
I'm terrible at not saying the wrong thing purposefully as well. I know there's not a good thing to say, and I'll go, no, I'm going to say that. And
it's not even that it comes out before you realise you're going to say it. You realise you're going to say it and you still say it.
Yeah, and sometimes that thought happens and I just go, all right, let's see where this goes. And it never goes anywhere nice.
You got any examples?
For example, I'm on it as a playwright, right? The first contract I signed to have a play put on was at the Orange Tree Theatre. And I signed that
lovely
contract.
Lovely theatre in Richmond. Lovely. Leafy, suburban London.
One of, I think, 4 permanently in-the-round theatres in the UK, perhaps 5. When I signed my first contract as a professional playwright, I did so while eating a chicken kebab. The whole office was looking at me going, what the fuck have we done?
Did you sign the contract in barbecue sauce?
The worst thing is a bit of chicken fell onto the contract.
Surely you should have used a bit of mayonnaise as Tippex to get rid of the stain.
Yeah, no, I'm not good at being appropriate at any given time. It's a slight problem, but it entertains me, so fuck everyone else.
I look forward to about 10 years time when you win your first BAFTA for screenwriting and you're just on stage.
10 years, he's really...
No, it's going to be a slow burn for Archie.
Okay.
All right, mate.
All right. I mean, he's been doing it for 5 or 6 years already.
Yeah.
I don't know how long these things take. Right, fine. Next year, when you win your BAFTA for screenwriting.
Don't patronise him, Ben. Yeah. Come on.
Jesus Christ. For the people at home, I am half black, and that's why Ben is exerting his authority over me in such a manner.
This has got me. That's a perfect example of it right there.
Yeah, exactly.
It made us all feel very awkward.
Mate, I'm used to this shit from Archie. There's no need to play the race card this early.
Racial tension. Sometimes I just cannot control what comes. I remember one time I had a job interview, and you know when they ask you those stupid, this is back when I was still trying to be a real human, when they ask you those questions like, what are your biggest weaknesses?
Yeah.
Most people go for a standard answer, like, oh, I work so hard, I work myself into the ground. I went, fire.
Just that one Power Ranger.
Yeah,
he could take you out in seconds.
I just thought, yeah, I'm going to go with fire. I thought that was a funny answer, and they did not appreciate it.
I like it, like you're a mythical creature. It's just like, yeah, but fire,
sorry,
silver
everyone's
bullets.
Everyone's biggest weakness is fire. There's no mythical creature needed. Everyone's weakness is fire. There's no fucking stone people walking around going, oh yeah, I'll walk through this shit.
Yeah. What's your biggest weakness? Not fire. Well, thank you for coming in, Mr. Yeah. Asbestos. You think we might have the job for you. This week we're talking about the world's worst playwright. Archie, as we've heard, is an award-nominated and soon-to-be award-winning playwright. I've written a play or two. Ben's working on a novel.
Yeah.
So, you know, storytelling. And you do have a drama degree.
acting
degree. That's kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
So you're gonna lead us off as the fresh sheep across the minefield.
So the first thing I should tell you about is probably the worst theatrical production I've ever seen, which was the first year I was at the Edinburgh Festival, and me and some mates went to go and see something that looked great, and it was Bouncy Castle Hamlet.
Amazing.
Which was, as the title says, Hamlet on a Bouncy Castle. There were three high points.
I mean, multiple high points, presumably, if they were bouncing all the time.
Strong. Firstly, when the ghost of Hamlet's dad turned up, it was a blow-up sex doll.
Hang on, it was a male sex doll.
No, it was a female sex doll.
Okay, because I was just imagining.
So dramaturgically, that is problematic.
Yeah, yeah.
Secondly, and this was
hate people sometimes.
Mate, we're just getting started on this.
No, it's how Shakespeare would have wanted it.
When they did the play with him.
Don't be ridiculous, he was more of a slip and slide man. Yeah.
He was a helter-skelter guy.
Marlo was much more of a bouncy castle.
He was no carpet, straight down splinters on his knee. Yeah.
I'm really sad they didn't follow it up with Bull Pool Othello.
The Tempest set in the middle of a ball pool would be great.
No, the Tempest at Wet and Wild. Oh, that's what you want.
Yeah.
This has started, I mean, like, next week, absurdist comedian Tony Law is doing a comedy show on ice, so we're not too far away from that. But anyway, is it the second or third act when the play within a play kicks off?
Act three, I think.
Yeah, when that happens, they brought a smaller bouncy castle onto the bouncy castle to do the play within the play.
Oh, that's quite funny.
that was quite funny. But the acting was dog shit, and the actor playing Hamlet...
Did they play it as completely serious, apart from they're on a bouncy castle?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Apart from... the actor...
I kind of feel like that's how you have to do that.
Yeah, total deadpan. The scene where Hamlet kills Polonius, the actor, by that time playing Hamlet, had forgotten his lines. He also came on stage and forgot the dagger. So he had in his hands a copy of Hamlet. And when it got to him stabbing the curtain, he went, "What do I do?" And then started beating Polonius to death with his own copy of Hamlet.
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like there's a metaphor for reviewers in there, though.
Yeah, definitely is.
There is a company that called Shitface Shakespeare. Have you guys seen them?
They're good, man.
Yeah, they're good. They get a member of the cast. They draw each night a member of the cast's name out, and that person gets smashed. And then they do the play around them, but do it completely straightforward, apart from that one person who's trying their best to fit in. And there are very few things funnier than a drunk person trying to fit in with sober people.
Yeah, drunk King Lear is a beautiful thing.
Is this two daggers I see?
I wonder if sometimes, because they're so drunk, you know when someone gets hammered and they get poignant drunk by mistake?
Yeah.
That maybe they like coax an amazing performance out of them.
Yeah, that's true.
No, I'd like them to get weird, touchy-feely drunk. Like a lonely man in a bar. Just like, you know, when they're going out to other men going, "You're my mate." Yeah. They're like, "The fuck is this?"
No sense of personal space.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that'd be beautiful. It was Othello getting hammered and going to Iago and, "You're my mate." You've got no fucking idea. But let's get on to actual playwrights. Firstly, we're going to go back to the 18th century, to the American Revolutionary War. As you'll know, that in the war, France supplied America with a lot of weaponry to fight the British. Basically, because they hated the British, and also they couldn't afford to go to war with us because they were skinned.
It's fucking typical of the French. Every war. Yeah.
They're standing behind the bully going, "Go on, hit him!"
Well, they probably didn't have France going, "Well, we cannot fight, but we can do the catering, if you would like." There was a very famous French playwright called Beaumarchais, and he's written two of the most famous plays of all time, The Marriage of Figaro and The Barber of Seville. So, pretty good playwright. However, he was chosen by Louis XVI to be the arms dealer, to broker this arms deal with America, mm-hmm. but, like, bafflingly. I don't know why they thought, like...
A playwright.
Yeah, exactly. There's no way that Michael Fallon, the Minister of Defence, is going to go, "Oh, we need to do a backroom deal with fighters in Iraq." I know who will get. Jez Butterworth. He'll absolutely nail it. No,
Alan Bennett.
Alan Bennett!
Would you like an F-14 bomber with a front
end? And there's Dame Maggie Smith dressed as the lady in the van inside it.
They wheel out Carol Churchill just going, "No, no, no, no more."
So he was down in Le Havre, down in the south of France. So down in Le Havre, he's loading up boats with supplies and weaponry and armaments. And he hears that there is a production of The Barber of Seville going on in town. So he goes, oh, I'll go and watch
it.
Of his own play. It is shockingly bad. And he becomes furious with the actors. I should point out at this time that all the time while he's been supplying these ships secretly with supplies for the Americans of War, he's been doing it under a pseudonym, using a fake company so no one finds out about it. He goes and watches this play, under the pseudonym sees it, loses his rag with the people performing, and says, right, I'm here in town on business for the next few weeks. I'm coming back here every day to take over the direction of these rehearsals until you get it right. And basically, he does that so openly that British spies in Le Havre find out who he is and what's going on, and he almost causes a war between the British and the Americans.
Wow.
Sorry, between the British and the French.
Amazing.
But I was tempted to go for that, but I decided not to. What is truly the worst play I've ever seen? A play that angered me and infuriated me, that I was tempted to stand up, heckle and walk out. 2 years ago, there was a young, up-and-coming Irish playwright who put on a play looking at the difficult and tempestuous nature of gay marriage in Ireland. And it was put forward for a new writing competition on the Dublin Fringe, I believe. And that play got beaten into second. That's a play that you wrote, Barry.
It
it's
is
called
a play in
Our
Ireland.
Island. I've not seen that play. It was beaten by a play called Overshadowed by someone called Eva O'Connor. My friend,
if you're listening, Eva, hi, and congratulations on your BBC Three series you've just had come out.
Hi, Eva. I've never met you. I'm about to take a massive Archie Maddox-style dump over your play.
I've never met you either, but I'm going to side with Ben immediately.
Oh, God. This is worse than you talking about me as if I'm the worst. It's talking about one of my friends as one of the worst.
I'm sorry. I weighed up whether I wanted to do this or not, and I decided that no play has angered me more than this play. I went to see it because my friend Maeve was in it. Maeve is a pretty good actor. To let you know about the play explores issues around anorexia. And
brilliant.
You've got that. No, that's fine. That's a perfectly good thing to write a play about.
It's not. It's not. It just upsets me now.
Archie, wait. Give it about 20 seconds. You're going to get so angry. The lead character is suffering from anorexia. She has a sister who wants to help her out of the situation, but she bats her away. She's got a mother who just doesn't understand her. She starts dating the bad boy at school who's misunderstood. So far, so yawn-inducingly cliched. The stuff that really made me want to eat my fist in horror was the fact that her anorexia is personified by another actor wearing a red morph suit with her face covered in white makeup and red rims around the eyes, who speaks in rhyming couplets.
Are you kidding?
No.
Is this real?
Yes.
Oh my God.
I think the suit was pink, if I can just quibble on that point.
Fine, quibble away. It was anus puckeringly bad. There's no two ways about it. I'm stopped drafting an email of apology to Eva as I say this. All the sort of stuff
like anorexia rhyme. Anorexia is more likely to just walk around just going, oh God. That's more like anorexia. But why is anorexia articulate?
To be honest, we should both be thankful that the character wasn't listed in the programme as anorexia, because that's the sort of level of shit that was happening here.
That is the sequel to Anna Karenina. No one's.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. I've not seen your play. I've read one of your plays, but I've not seen this play. And I was sad that you missed out on winning it. And I was watching it, watching Overshadow, and I thought, do you know what? I've not seen Barry's play, but I know that it's better than this, because there's no way that Barry is capable of writing something worse than this dreadful piece of shit.
Am I free now? Are you done?
No, because that's not my decision.
Oh,
that's
God. Like, thank God.
I'm trying to be as fair-minded as I can, because clearly she is talented. I think she's written 4 or 5 plays. Yep. She's also an actress.
And she's a very strong advocate for women's rights in terms of abortion and...
Brilliant!
Yeah, all those other things.
And here's the thing, like, obviously, I don't in any way want to belittle anorexia. It was a really debilitating mental illness, and we do need to talk about it. But not in rhyming couplets!
Oh, God.
bunch.
This is amazing.
It's very rare that this podcast gets personal. Like, genuinely, I've seen the only
I was much more comfortable when we were talking about Liverpool playing Newcastle in the 90s.
Yeah, well, this is my fucking comeback. Well, I don't know. I've not suffered from anorexia. Maybe that's how it manifests itself in your brain.
What, while you're throwing shit up, you're going, whoa, rhyme. Start rapping. Oh, no, that's not anorexia. That's bulimia, isn't it?
Bulimia, yeah. Raps.
Bulimia Raps. Bulimia Rhapsody.
That's our show. Goodbye.
Yeah. That's going to be my sequel to Overshadowed.
And I'll level you. I was tempted to make that my suggestion.
I'm so glad you haven't.
But I haven't, because I found the former White House Director of Communications, Stephen K. Bannon.
Oh, no.
Now, in 1992, him and a Hollywood screenwriter wrote together a hip-hop-inspired play based on the Rodney King L.A. riots.
Oh, my God.
Didn't think I could feel more uncomfortable, and now I am.
And basically what he did is he took Shakespeare's Coriolanus and not one of Shakespeare's greatest plays either. And he glued on his own version of street slang to do a play that he thought was taking on the hot topics of the time. I like the fact that I've made Barry awkward for 5 minutes. And now Archie's
joining me in this yawning hole in the ground.
I'm not awkward. I find this. I want to read this play.
Yeah, well, I'm going to read you some bits of it in a bit.
Oh, wow.
So he wrote this along with a screenwriter called Julia Jones. And the play is called The Thing I Am, which is a quote from the play Coriolanus. The synopsis of Coriolanus is that a victorious Roman soldier, Roman general, is put up to be a candidate in an election in Rome. Mm-hmm. And he refuses because he's like, I don't want to flatter the populace of Rome. And so the tribunes who put him up for it then turn against him. He then scarpers out of Rome and he sides with the Volscians who he had fought. And he then attacks Rome again. And his mum goes, stop, don't do it. And then the Romans kick the shit out of him and he dies. Steve decided to transfer this to LA, and instead of being the Romans and the Volscians, to be the Bloods and the Crips.
Oh, no. Wow.
Some...
What does that have to do with Rodney King?
I don't know.
If there's anyone who knows about the Bloods and the Crips, it's definitely Steve Bannon.
Yeah, though. And he just thought, oh, well, they're black, they probably know each other. See, they're late, there's five of them. They must be part of the same crew.
Some of the characters named in it include the Mac Daddy of South Central. That's the Patrician of Rome.
Oh, God. That is such a white guy name for a black person.
Yeah.
So, Mac Daddy.
The play opens with a framing device of a song that links South Central LA's gang culture to South African gold miners. And it's written in the script that there should be a cacophony of voices climaxing in a feeling from the Serengeti all the way to from their lost homeland.
Serengeti's not in South Africa.
No? What, are you expecting Steve Bannon to have
done
knowledge?
A little bit of research? Yeah.
So let me read to you from bits of it, just so you can really, really enjoy how bad some of this is.
I reckon his research was just to listen to Toto's song Africa.
Yeah. Which, by the way, they play all the time in South Africa.
Yeah. Really?
Like, literally every shop you walk into. Dun, 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 dun. And I was like, they really want people to know where they are, don't they?
The character Brutus says, dear, we're cheap, not dear. White folk are dear. Their kibbles and bits would relieve us, but they call us dear and cast us nothing. Our suffering, their gain. Let's avenge with guns and knives. I speak from hunger. Now let's do it. That's a little taster.
Right.
It gets worse. Here's a look, one of my favourite stage directions. In a fight between Marcius and Aufidius, A highly stylized and choreographed fight sequence occurs. They go foot to foot, then pull out knives. Ophidius flips Coriolanus over his back, and they break into an ultimate fight championship meets Hong Kong swordplay.
Fuck, this sounds immense, mate. We need to revive this.
How about, I reckon Talawa would do it.
Talawa would be all over this.
Oh yeah, this is another one from Ophidius. All yield to him. The press, Whitey, the colour aristocrats of his own set. Only the trash is weak, and I think he'll view them as birds do fish and take them as his due. He served the hood, but lost it.
I have literally no idea what's going on.
It's absolutely fucking bizarre. It's the weirdest thing I've ever read. My one final thing that I'll quote from it. There's one character who says, in a way that this is clearly Steve Bannon thinking he knows how black people speak and doesn't. I'm an OG from the hood and come to speak with Coriolanus. And you'd think that
I can corroborate it. That is how my whole family speaks.
Yeah. that's how Sir Trevor MacDonald speaks when the cameras are off. Now, I would say that that's the worst thing that he's ever written. However, apparently there is an unpublished manuscript of Titus Andronicus in space.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
Oh my god.
If you want to watch this, earlier in the year, the internet media company Now This got together a group of actors and they did a table reading of it.
Oh no.
So it's on YouTube, and it's astonishing.
Worst playwright.
Go for it. Anyone else I know?
Well, first of all, one of the worst things I've ever seen. I've seen some fucking dog shit over the years, right? I saw a play in Hampstead Theatre. Can't remember what it was called, but for some reason there was water on the stage, and a woman just kept kicking water into this old lady on the front row's face. She just kept doing it, and I thought they were Irish at one point, and then they were from Korea. It made no fucking sense. I fell asleep. I stayed awake. I always fall asleep at the theatre. I stayed awake because I was so furious at what I was watching.
That's how you know that Archie really hates a play, is he stays awake till the end
awake.
Of it.
I love it, or I'm fucking so angry. And I saw something at Edinburgh Fringe this year called The Wasteland, which I think I spoke to you a little bit.
Yes.
Basically, it was a company from New York who they did a version of T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland poem, epic poem.
Yeah.
They decided to stage it as if it was a trance party. They offered you sugar pills as you came in. And for no reason, the main guy recited the poem. He gets completely naked, turns around to the wall and starts wanking into a bucket.
What?
Literally for no reason. And then he turns around, comes out of the poem and goes, I think that's what society's like right now.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Oh my god, that is...
And then he dressed up as a woman and just started saying, Donald Trump doesn't care. He doesn't care. Donald Trump does not care. I was like, why does he dress up as a woman to say that? It's the same. It was awful. It's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
One of those things where someone has gone, I have a brilliant idea. Let's stage The Wasteland. And someone's gone, and someone who should know better has said, no one has ever done that before.
Yeah.
This is a genius idea. Not, no one has ever done this before because this is a terrible idea.
I was speaking to a mate about this podcast before, and we were talking about terrible musicals, which we will inevitably do on another podcast.
Yeah.
But someone in London about 10 years ago staged a musical set in a concentration camp.
Oh, yeah.
And it did not last long.
Yeah.
And what me and my pal decided is that there are definitely Hollywood producers who once every 10 years, sort of like the two old guys in Trading Places, go, okay, what's the most unstageable musical you can put on?
There is a...
Or is it called Temperature?
I can't remember what that... Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
The Sean Paul remix. Right, temperature. Who thought that was a good idea? See, this is what I mean.
I think you're fine.
Apparently, that show was reasonably good.
Oh, fucking no!
Like in terms of the artist, like the songs and the staging and everything, but it came out just as the credit crunch happened, and everyone was like, we have no money. We don't want to watch something like this.
Yeah, they should have called it the Black and White Pajama Game.
Oh, God. Oh, sweet Jesus.
Oh. Yeah, so that's one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Okay.
Another one was where I was in New York and there was a guy doing Fringe Theatre and he was like, oh, it's an award-winning show. It's One Man is Fantastic. And then I went in and there were me and three other people, and he went in and pretended to be a woman having her period for the first time, but didn't explain that. He just got a sachet of blood and like poured it down his leg and then stared at us, and he was just saying stuff like aggression, menstruation, pain, pregnancy, ovulation, eggs, shame. I was just looking going, what the fuck is going on? And it was that for an hour, and I was like, this is just awful. This is one of the worst things I've ever seen. Can't remember who that was, but that was terrible.
It's the same guy who was in the wasteland.
Yeah, it's the same accent. I haven't got a very good range when I've got a cold. The worst playwright, I'm going to go for a controversial choice here. I'm going to go for Harold Pinter.
Ooh, big hitter. Nobel Prize winner, Harold Pinter.
He can fuck off. All right, there's a lot of playwrights that I can't stand, particularly ones of the older generations, such as I can't stand Chekhov, I can't stand Ibsen.
I don't like George Bernard Shaw.
No, not a fan. No. I mean, the thing with Ibsen, I don't get what everyone goes, oh, he draws out such fantastic characters. No, he doesn't. There's a woman stuck in a house and moaning about it for an hour. What the fuck is this? This is a shit play. Why does everyone like this? This is crap. I'm going to go for Pinter because I've read it and never been that impressed by it. And I know that I'll probably see a production where I go, oh yeah, he is amazing. Every production of Pinter I've ever seen has been awful. I saw a production of Homecoming, and it took the characters 18 minutes to say their first lines.
Holy shit!
After 10 minutes,
that's not the one that was on in the in London like a few years ago with them.
No, this was ages ago. This one I was about 10 or something.
Are you sure you didn't accidentally have them on mute? It was all like we're sat on the remote control.
What, at the theatre?
Yeah.
Well, I just gone momentarily deaf. Just like, well, what is happening here?
What my mouthing going on in this play?
18 minutes, and I swear to you, I was so just... I was a happy 10-year-old, and this turned me. This is why oh, God, it was awful. And also, just a quick theatrical story about Pinter. You know how he's got this thing about pauses, and there's the Pinter-esque pause and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Number one, just lazy, mate. Number two... there's this wonderful story of someone was doing, I can't remember which actor it was, but it was a big, it might have been Laurence Olivier or something. Mm-hmm. And he was doing it in one of the Lyceum or something like that down the West End. And he was in the middle of one of his pauses and he was doing a proper long drawn out pause. Mm. And from one of the boxes, he heard this woman go, oh, Rupert, you've come on my umbrella.
Yes!
Worst play, right?
Oh,
if people are coming on umbrellas during your play, that's not a good play.
The most tantric of playwrights.
Yeah. I mean, if someone starts knocking one out mid-performance, that is not a good play.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing arousing about Pinter plays.
No.
He's sort of, his reputation has been quite edgy and like menace, and the pauses are, it's like a bit, it's sort of a bit jazzy. It's what he doesn't play rather than what he does. Yeah,
you can eat a truck of dicks as far as I'm concerned. Unless you like that, then eat a truck of pum.
Yeah. But the problem is, if you're getting a blowjob from Pinter, kind of like it's in and then it's out for ages and ages and ages.
Which, in my experience, is a bad blowjob.
Yeah, that is a bad blowjob.
It needs to be in rather than out. And if you're fucked, don't blow on it, mate. Come, just get right to the balls.
No, but it's the sucks he doesn't do.
Is it Betrayal? Is his play about a couple breaking up, but it's in reverse?
Probably.
Or he tells from one end story from the start and one from the end. I think they meet in the middle.
That sounds about
Which is interesting. As an idea.
Formically, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Talking of like people who's fucked about with form and infuriated me, another one that I was tempted for was Eugene O'Neill.
I like Eugene O'Neill.
Do you know about Strange Interlude?
No.
So Strange Interlude was his most experimental work. It is 5 hours long and required a dinner break in the middle. And his idea was that the characters would also speak their thoughts. So,
oh god, that sounds.
And if you look at the script of it, virtually every single line has got an adverb next to it. So she speaks hauntingly.
Yeah, he's a big fan.
He adds
of
dramatically, and it just gives you nothing to play with as an actor because you just turn into an automaton.
Yeah.
But there was one review that basically spoke about it, how it was essentially a comic book with thought bubbles being spoken on stage all the time.
There's Brian Friel's play Translations is about the British Army renaming the areas, the towns and places in Ireland with anglicised versions of the Irish names. and the script is entirely in English, but when the Irish people are speaking, they're speaking in Irish. When they're speaking to English people, they're having conversations in English where neither of them can understand each other, which is quite interesting. Mm. But if you're seeing that for the first time, as I did at the age of like 12, you're going, I have no idea why they don't understand each other. What's going on? Excellent. All right, Harold Pinter, big hitter.
Fucking.
He's got nothing on Stevie Bannon.
Right.
Well, I'd rather watch a Bannon play than a Pinter play.
I think the problem with Pinter is that he's got, because of the Pinter pause thing, it was like, oh, well, with Pinter, you have to pause a lot. And then you get this thing where people are going, okay, that's how you do Pinter. And they pause all the time and you get all these terrible productions. Same way with Chekhov. People go, oh, it's all about people's inner life rather than their outer life. So it becomes really slow and turgid. Whereas actually, when he was writing it, these were meant to be comedies and played much more quickly than people actually do. Yeah. But you get these productions of his plays, which like 3.5 hours long. You go, gee, hurry up!
Well, it's like with Shakespeare as well. It's people think you should declaim in a Shakespeare voice. Yeah. It's like, that's not what it's meant to be.
Yeah,
it's hard to find a good, well-done Shakespeare. Like, so many times you see people and they have this thing of showing you that they're acting. Whatever. I'm acting now. Look at my posture. It's fantastic. And I'm like, just saying the fucking words, dickhead.
I remember seeing a production of Rome.
I would love to see you direct one of your own plays.
I have, and it did not go well. No, I just shouted at the actors going, no, that's not how you say it. Say it again. That's not how you say it. Say it again. Change it. I'm not
like a Meisner torture.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not a good director. Although I reckon I could direct stuff that's not my own. I think if I'm too close to my own stuff, I know exactly how I think it should sound, so I can't do it. That's I think I could direct if I did TV and film, which is a distinct possibility at the moment. But, I think I could direct that because I can kind of, because there's a screen in front of you, and because of the way it's shot. And it's staggered and everything. It's never linear. You can go like, okay, yeah, that needs to be more like this. We need to see this, blah, blah, blah. But with theatre, I'm too close to it.
I think you can write and direct Bulimic Rhapsody. I can see it. It's just kind of like, give me less.
Oh, no. If any of you have been affected by the issues in today's episode of Worst Foot Forward, please tweet Ben.
Who with a serious medical condition is going to listen to a podcast called Worst Foot?
Unless it's someone suffering from club foot.
Or diabetes.
I was going to say leprosy, but hey, that's a trifecta,
guys. Diabetes, straight up.
Yeah.
One of my cousins lost their feet to diabetes. You know what we call them?
What?
Oh, shit, I forgot what we call them. Oh, no, we call them Sugarfoot.
Sugar.
It's quite bad. God. Another one had his eye poked out. We call him double vision.
Please tell me that you sing that to the theme tune of Chuckle Vision whenever he's doing it.
Double vision. Well, this is in Trinidad, so you know, you've got to be.
Double vision and Sugarfoot. Yeah. They are two amazing shit henchmen, aren't they?
This is in the Caribbean, people tell you what is wrong with you immediately, so you can't be upset about it. It's well funny.
Excellent.
They just see what your problem is if you've got like a big knee. Oh, big knee!
I looked at some theatre records, first of all. Mm-hmm. Longest running play, as everyone is probably very aware, is The Mousetrap. It's been the longest running play. It became the longest running play in the West End 5 years after it opened in 1957. So like it was already really long 60 years ago. And now it's just recently it's passed its 65th anniversary.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like over 25,000 performers of it now.
That can never stop. I feel that play is like the Ravens at the Tower of London. When the Mousetrap finally closes, the West End is done.
Yeah. It moved. It opened in the Ambassadors Theatre. And the Ambassadors and where it is now, which is the name of it, I can't remember. It moved from the Ambassadors to the theatre it's in now. I think it's St. Martin's. It moved from the Ambassadors Theatre next door to the St. Martin's Theatre. So it ended on a Saturday and then reopened in the new theatre on the Monday. So it's still a continuous unbroken run. Because if they'd taken longer, then they'd have missed performances. So they kept that going.
Oh, by the way, I'll save you going to see it. The butler did it.
He didn't do it.
Go see it. The butler didn't do it.
He didn't do it. Don't be a wanker. The policeman did it. Richard Attenborough was in the first cast of it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realise. And he and another cast member got 10% like profits. They got a 10% share of all the profits the show made. He sold some of it, sinking it into a restaurant in Mayfair that didn't last. And sold the rest of it when he was trying to make sure Gandhi got made.
Huh.
Yeah.
Fuck Gandhi.
No, film or him?
Him. He's a wanker. Everyone loves Gandhi. He's a prick. He's a skinny prick.
Now, I know why you don't like Gandhi. You
hate Gandhi.
You are going to need to give footnotes to this.
I hate Gandhi because he hated black people and he called them Kaffirs and stuff like that because he went to school in South Africa. Yeah. And also, he was a fucking creep. He used to sleep in the bed naked with virgins to test how, like, virtuous he was. And he let, like, his wife either come really close or die of a blood transfusion because he didn't want to give her any of his blood.
And most importantly, he lost us India. Like, just, what a dickhead.
He did. Mate, fucking sit down, have a samosa and shut your mouth.
Yeah, Gandhi, the Nigel Farage of the 1940s.
Fuck Gandhi.
The longest individual...
Sorry, can I just put it out, by the way? Like, whilst Gandhi is obviously a very complex historical figure, I get, when I mention bulimia, you go, ooh, we must have an explicit rating. Now, this guy goes, fuck Gandhi for 5 minutes, and you let him get a free pass.
Fine, I don't know Gandhi personally.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Gandhi should... we should also make a cameo in Bulimic Rhapsody.
What, told him the path? He could be... Yeah. He could be like the spiritual...
Yeah, exactly.
With his fucking little nappy and his stick. I'm writing this play, man.
He would be a more plausible character than the personified anorexia. If that had been in the play, that would have deserved to win the best new play in Dublin.
It's becoming more and more like Angels in America for eating disorders. This man has an opportunity.
Sorry if you've been affected by any of
these. Yesterday was Mental Health Awareness Day.
Well, we're very aware.
We're very aware of what the problem is, and we're taking a piss using Gandhi.
Yeah. Oh, man. The longest individual stage performance was by Adrian Hilton. In June 1987, he recited the complete works of Shakespeare on the South Bank at the location of the First Globe Theatre. It took him 110 hours and 46 minutes.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, and you've got to feel for poor Norris McWhirter sat there listening to all of it.
I'll have another record for you as well. The longest play ever performed. Ken Campbell, legendary comedic and improvisational performer, used to do these long, sort of half improvised, fantastic stage productions, which would last sort of a whole day. But his shows had intervals. Whereas the longest play ever performed was a play called Yes, Thank You, Universe, A Tale of Two Attitudes.
Did Bannon write this?
No. The guy who wrote this is astonishing. Can't wait till I tell you about it. This play had 9 actors in it. It was performed in Jammu in India in 2015. And it was written specially to break a world record. It was an attempt to spread super positivity. And it was over 24 hours long. And the guy who wrote it is a guy called Vikrant Mahajan. He is a former Mr. India motivational speaker. He also holds a record for the fastest made feature film from script to release. He released an 80-minute film of the same name of this play, Yes, Thank You, Universe, which this is his chant that he spreads in his motivational stuff. He started writing the film at 1:30 a.m. in the morning, and they had made it and released it to an audience of 35 people by 10 p.m. that night. And he spent a whole year basically breaking world records. He has a record for the longest ever speech, 48 hours, 31 minutes. He did 100 world records in a year, including the longest squash rally, the fastest mile balancing a table tennis ball on a table tennis bat, the longest ever fashion show, the longest lines of bookmarks, the longest line of playing cards and envelopes, those last three all in one day in the same school.
This sounds like a dude with a tiny dick, man.
Yeah. and he's been in some films, and he is not a good actor. There is no sort of filmed version of this play, but he was also in this play playing multiple roles. So if you have to sit through 24 hours of a super positivity play with this shit actor, who has also written and presumably directed and is in it, I reckon that would not be an enjoyable experience.
Oh, fuck no. Yeah. Oh, he sounds tedious.
Yeah, he was very close to being my suggestion, but I have a couple more things. You talked about stage directions and Steve Bannon stuff.
Yeah.
I looked up some really horrendous stage directions, like stage directions that are problematic try and stage. Exit Pursued by a Bear is obviously very famous from Winter's Tale, Shakespeare.
My favourite version of Exit Pursued by a Bear I've ever seen was someone runs off and there's a teddy bear that's been on stage and they just hurl the teddy bear at them.
Nice.
I've seen a version in drag of A Winter's Tale. Yeah. And when it's a bear, it's just a big hairy gay guy.
Yes!
And he just walks off and he goes, ooh, and I'm like, oh, that is fucking...
Sarah Kane has a couple of belters in Cleansed.
Oh, like when the rats are eating their food and stuff, yeah.
There's a couple making love in Cleansed, and the stage direction is, a sunflower bursts from the ground and grows above their heads. And later on in the play, he takes Carl by the arms and cuts off his hands. Carl tries to pick up his hands. He can't. He has no hands. and Peter Schaffer's one, in the Royal Hunt of the Sun, they staged at the National in the 60s. The stage direction was, they cross the Andes.
That's amazing.
But maybe the most famous and litigated stage direction was Howard Brenton's Rome's in Britain in the early 1980s. At the National Theatre, he had the 11 words, the third soldier holds Marban's thighs and attempts to bugger him. And that led to a massive court case. So Mary Whitehouse had basically sent one of her lackeys, her lawyer, a guy called Graham Ross Corns, to go to see the play, because she'd heard there was nudity and all sorts of depravity on stage in this play. And he went and saw the play, and then afterwards handed Michael Bogdanov, who was the director, a letter basically accusing him of breaking the Sexual Offences Act. And there was a big trial a couple of years later. The actors were asked questions like, had you been aroused? Had you found it necessary to masturbate in the wings after the scene? And the case fell apart because Ross Corns was brought in as a witness, and he said he had seen the tip of the Roman's penis. And so
the tip of the Roman's penis is a great murder mystery as
well. And they brought in a seating plan for the theatre and got him to mark where he'd been sat, and he sat right at the back. And the QC acting for the National Theatre said, what, Mary Whitehouse couldn't afford anything closer to the stage? How very, very low class. And then the Lord Hutchinson, who sounds like a total legend, this QC, demonstrated what could be done with your fist on your crotch with just a thumb sticking out. After struggling with his, you know, his lawyer's robes, he then eventually managed to show him what they had actually been doing on stage and what he thought was the tip of the guy's penis. He was just holding his fist around his cock and then had a little, his thumb stuck up. So when he said he'd seen it, they proved him to be wrong and the whole case collapsed. It's quite cool.
All based around a QC's thumb.
All based around a QC's thumb. I know you've read about this as well.
Yes, mate.
I'm going to talk about the Moose Murders, which, if have you heard of this play?
No.
Oh, it is considered the biggest flop of a play ever on Broadway.
Oh, God.
The guy wrote is a guy called Arthur Bicknell, and he'd had some success as a playwright, and he got some good reviews for previous works, and he wanted to write this play inspired by a murder which took place near where he grew up. They opened this play in the Eugene O'Neill Theatre on February 22nd, 1983.
Oh, good. I'm glad that he's got a second mention then.
Yeah, Eugene O'Neill again. And it was backed by a rich Texan who'd read the script and thought it sounded hilarious. It was sort of going to be a farce, murder, mystery. The plot was something about the heirs of this wealthy old guy go and visit him to help him see out his final days in this lodge, and then hilarity ensues as people get killed.
Sounds like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, it's a little bit that. It opened February 22nd and it closed February 22nd.
Really? One day.
Literally, he said it was so badly received that he went out drinking with his friends after the show. Obviously, the reviews came out in the early editions. He saw it was going to be a complete flop. And he walked home past the theatre that night, sort of early hours of the morning, and saw they were already taking the set down.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Some of the reviews are amazing. Now, they sort of had big hopes for it when they started out. Like, Eve Arden was going to be in it. She was Oscar nominated for being in Mildred Pierce, and she hadn't done Broadway for over 40 years and was going to be her big comeback. She pulled out because of artistic differences.
Have you had anyone pull out because of artistic differences?
Nah, just to avoid pregnancy, mate.
Very good.
June Gable was in it. She played Estelle, Joey's sort of agent in Friends. The director was a guy called John Roach, who cast his wife in it for her only ever Broadway credit.
Oh, that is...
That's where it begins to become suspicious. And some of the reviews. If your name is Arthur Bicknell or anything like it, then change it. It would insult the intelligence of an audience consisting entirely of amoebas. So indescribably bad, I do not intend to waste anyone's time by describing it. I will not identify the cast pending notification of next of kin. And there are bad plays, terrible plays, and plays like Moose Murders.
I feel so much better after hearing that.
It's great, isn't it? Frank Rich, who's the legendary Butcher of Broadway reviewer, who just could sort of, like, bit like Roger Ebert, comes into his own when he writes reviews of things that he hates. From now on, there will always be two groups of theatre goers in this world, those who have seen Moose Murders and those who have not. The 10 actors trapped in this enterprise, a minority of them of a professional calibre, will not be singled out here. I'm tempted to upbraid the author, director and producers of Moose Murders, but surely the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals will be after them soon enough. The guy who wrote it, Bicknell, sort of has left it behind to an extent, but then came around to embrace it a little bit. He wrote a book about it.
Did he do this a bit
like OJ?
Yes. Yeah.
If I had done it, I would have done it.
He actually, his book is called Moose Murdered, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love My Broadway Bomb.
I was going to say, I listened to Gerald Ratner was on the radio last week, the guy who famously slagged off his jewellery and said it was trash and then basically lost hundreds of millions of pounds. And he's owned that and done after dinner speaking now.
Yeah. Well, he said, I've a quote from Bicknell, he says, "I wrote the worst play that was ever on Broadway. That's something." So, our candidates are Ben's suggestion of Steve Bannon, notable author or adapter of Shakespeare's Coriolanus. Archie's suggestion of Harold Pinter. And my own suggestion of just putting in some pauses for you, mate, to really get under your skin.
That immediately pissed me off. Yeah.
Just some dead air. And my own suggestion of Arthur Bicknell, the creator of the Moose Murders. Oh, God, give me a choice between a white supremacist and a Nobel Prize winner, you know. And dear old Arthur Bicknell. I kind of feel a bit for Arthur Bicknell. He seems like... like he was all right, and he's just had this one play, which basically meant he would never ever work again.
They say no publicity is bad publicity.
Yeah, but so. This was very well. That was another thing. When the play closed, apparently the reviews were so bad that people were ringing the theatre the next day trying to get tickets because they wanted to see how bad it was.
A terrible review can actually make people come and watch what you're doing.
Yeah, someone said, "Oh, we could have sold out for months," but they'd already closed it.
So it's sort of like the theatrical version of The Room, that, isn't it?
Yeah. Although I think...
Oh, God, that is immense.
Yeah.
Love The Room.
So bad, it's good.
It is so
This apparently good. Is just so bad, it's bad. But a couple of people have tried restaging it, kind of for that schlock value, but yeah, to know...
The Room is just... It's incredible.
Yeah, we've talked about him, Tommy.
When I read about the Moose Murders, I thought it might be like a theatrical reimagining of Woody Allen's seminal stand-up routine. Yeah. I was like, I gotta watch that.
Yeah, no, sadly not. Harold Pinter. I have seen at least one production of Pinter I liked. Not
I
many.
Not.
I think I'm gonna pick Steve Bannon.
God damn it.
I'm sorry, Archie. I know it's nice to kick people who are... It's nice to topple the statues, but occasionally it's nice to, you know, just kick a white supremacist in the balls.
Yeah,
especially when they've done a play about Rodney King.
Yeah, I think there's that whole thing, write what you know. And in Steve Bannon's case, he's done exactly the opposite. So yeah, why not? We're going to pick Steve Bannon as the world's worst player. He was bound to win something. I'm surprised it's been this.
Yeah, me too. The thing is as well is not like now he's in a position of power. Like he could get that made into like a feature film if it wasn't for the fact that he's not going to like any producer in Hollywood.
This is true. Before we go, I have to give you the worst news of the week. And this comes from The Express here in the UK. Ben, it's our old friend, the planet Nibiru, is back in the news again.
Really?
Yeah, it's supposed to hit in like 3 days or something.
It has been supposed to hit on and off for the last few years. And so I was reading another article about it. Nibiru fever has struck. We talked about it in an episode about conspiracy theories and a couple of episodes ago again. This time, an author called David Mead has written a book called Planet X, The 2017 Arrival. He says it's going to arrive next month, not last month, as it was supposed to hit. Mm. He's suggested that scientists have been disappeared for daring to mention it. And he names a couple of people. Robert Harrington of the US Naval Observatory died of cancer in 1993, so very much, you know, disappeared by government agents.
Yeah, that's the ultimate way to disappear.
And a guy called Rodney Marks, who worked at a South Pole telescope, he died of alcohol poisoning in the year 2000.
I was so hoping when you said Rodney Marks.
Rodney King. And then the doctor from that station also disappeared in 2006. So this guy, David Mead, says there's a massive worldwide conspiracy to make sure people don't know about Nibiru so that the secret underground bunkers for the elite are kept empty and are not rushed by people who know about Nibiru and decide they want to get safe.
Okay, so according to them, a planet is going to smash into this planet.
Yeah.
But if you're underground, you'll be fine.
That's basically their reasoning here.
There was a well funny thing. There was a guy who works for like a radio station that tried to interview like him or someone else like the day before the planet was supposed to hit last month, and he said, are you available tomorrow? And the guy who thought the planet was going to hit the next day goes, I'm not available till next week.
Amazing. Archie, if people want to find out more about you...
Yeah, I'm going to be in Speaker's Corner.
If Mossad want to come find you.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm going to be down Whitechapel just castigating Gandhi the whole time. Go fuck your king, he's a prick. A quick question about Nibiru.
Yeah.
You know, I want to see what happens when you get the Nibiru people in a room with the flat earthers. I think that would be a well funny conversation.
That's the question. If would it make a difference if we were flat? Would Nibiru then just bounce off us?
What I think will bounce off is Nibiru will crash into us and then the earth will just wrap around it like a blanket.
Ah.
Like paper like beating paper stone.
Do you know what the
then? Oh, that'd be amazing because then earth will be round. It'll disprove the flat earthers.
You know, they'll both be really annoyed.
Do you know what is well funny about the flat earth theory? Do you know who won? The most famous flat earthers is.
He's like an NBA player?
Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal.
Shaquille O'Neal.
Oh, Shaq, no.
You're tall enough to see the curvature of the earth. The evidence is right there.
What's even better about that is he can understand that a ball can, you know, balance.
Yeah. I mean, he literally made his living using a sphere.
Yeah. Yes, if people want to find out more about you, where can they go to do that?
They can find out more about me on Twitter at Archie Maddox, on Instagram at Archie Maddox, archimaddox.co.uk, which has not been updated for about a year and a half, but still... and you can find me at a gig all around the country. And that's about it for the time being. I have one video on YouTube. It's quite old now. That's about it. You could find me in a coffee jar in Camden. I'm there most days.
Meanwhile, we're going to go off and murder a moose using only our thumbs. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye. Just like end the show now. Do we have to do an outro? The sooner this hell is over for me, the better.
Look, just be glad that it wasn't my actual choice.
I'm very, very glad. I'm glad that you thought Steve Bannon is worse. I'm really looking forward to seeing Steve Bannon take on, you know, mental health in one of his future works.
I think he's involved in an immersive theatre production of it right now.
Thank you very much, Archie, for doing the show. Check him out on social media if you want to see any of his gigs as a stand-up, or if you want to check out stuff about his writing work. He posts a lot of his updates about awards he's been nominated for and any work that he's got that you can go and see as well. So find him on Twitter.
You can also see him on Wednesday, November the 1st at 9 p.m. Making his debut at the Soho Theatre with his latest stand-up show, Illuminati. It's really, really funny. I saw it in Edinburgh. He's a superb storyteller. He works crowds really well. And there's a story about him shitting himself on an Aztec pyramid.
So you've got that to look forward to.
Yeah.
As ever, if you want to hear us shit on basically any subject under the sun, then check us out on iTunes and Stitcher and all those things. Give us a rating and a review. I know we say it every week, but it really does make a difference. And thank you to those people who've started to trickle in a few new ones recently. If you want to find us on Twitter, we're there at Worst Foot, or individually Ben is at Ben Vandeveld and I am at Baz Maxtay. You can also find the podcast on Facebook or email us worstfootforwardpodcast@gmail.com.
Next week we have got another topic that involved a lot of juicy research. We've got another comedian on, my pal Ria Lina, who in her previous life did all sorts of things to do with forensics and biometrics and fraud, and we are bringing the world's worst legal defences.
And the defence will not rest, I'm alert, until we can find... So, genuinely, some of the stuff that comes out next week is brilliant, so do tune in.